them, fancy bugles there, huh? How about that, huh? George, your old station here is really getting fancy. George. Boop, 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 boop. That's kind of nice. Boop, 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 boop. Boop, 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 boop. That's silly. I'm here. I'm a grown-up person. What am I doing? This is ridiculous. What an idiot. That's right. You're right. It is silly. I said it first. George, this is the Jolly Green Giant here, friends. Oh, oh, oh. Understand the Jolly Green Giant hangs around a lot on McDougal Street. It's just a rumor I heard. Choo, choo, choo. Little tune. That's an in-joke, son. In-joke, son. Da, da, da. Bring it up big there. Da, da, da. George, I'm on the air. I'm on the radio. Oh, it's so exciting. Oh, look at that. Is this a microphone here? Oh, yeah. It's funny. It doesn't look like I thought it did, you know? I thought that, I see pictures all the time. They got signs all over them. There's a little thing here. This is a microphone. You mean they can hear me? Oh, no, I don't believe that. friends... How many of you can hardly wait for the next episode in that little drama that is slowly unfolding in the Right Guard commercials? I'm all ready for the whole day. You know that little drama that's going on. Those two people that shared a medicine cabinet there. Oh, yeah. And my old friend Chuck McCann, you know, he's the fat one. Yeah, Chuck's the one that says, "Hiya, fella. Hi, guy." He's always, "Hi, guy. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm all ready for the whole day." That's Chuck, all right. Yes, sir. All right, I'll award. Now, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. There are some things that are instant trivia. All right, smart guy. Of course, I know. All right, we'll answer it for you. Yes, my show is instant trivia. Right, right. Instantly trivial. I have a little instant trivia here for you. Some things are truly instant trivia. Lee, you're always smart with this stuff. Now listen carefully. What is the name of one of the characters' wives in the Right Guard soap opera that's going on? Very good. This is truly an American test we're giving here, because after all, I think our art form is the commercial. I must agree with Judith Crist. I see Judith Crist. Actually, she agrees with me, because she did a piece recently in the New York Magazine about commercials, how great they are. Why, for a long time, the only thing I ever watch is commercials. I think some of them are fantastic commercials, you know. Now, have you noticed, how many of you noticed that the White Knight, you know the White Knight, used to work for Ajax, you remember him? He'd come galloping along all the time with that big lance and that big white horse and that silver armor. Well, you remember him? He's working now for another company, apparently. I will award a brass figurine with bronze oak leaf palm to anyone who can tell me what product the White Knight is selling now. He's come down in the world a little bit, but would you please give me a little cheap guitar music, friends? Ha, 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 a little Right Guard, and I'm all ready for the whole day. Da, da, da. All right, friends, you are now going to hear the fable of the visitor who got a lot for $3. The learned phrenologist sat in his office surrounded by his whiskers. Now then, he put a forefinger to his brow and glanced at the mirror to make sure that he still resembled William Cullen Bryant. Near him, on a table, was a pallid head made of plaster Paris and stickily ornamented with small labels. On the wall was a chart showing that the orangutan does not have Daniel Webster's facial angle. "Is this graph played out?" asked the learned phrenologist as he waited for customers. "Is the graph played out? Is science up against it or what?" And then he heard the fall of heavy feet and resumed his imitation of William Cullen Bryant. The door opened, and there came into the room a tall, rangy person with a head in the shape of a Rocky Ford cantaloupe. Aroused from his meditation, the learned phrenologist looked up at the stranger as though through a glass, darkly, and pointed to a red plush chair. Well, the easy mark collapsed into the boarding house chair, and the man with more whiskers than Darwin ever saw stood behind him and ran his fingers over his head, tarantula-wise. "Well, well, well," said the learned phrenologist. "Well, well, enough benevolence here to do a family of eight." Yes, courage, courage. Oh, I guess so. Oh. You know, Dewey's got the same kind of a lump right over the left ear. Admiral Dewey. Love of home and friends? Oh, yes, indeed, like the ridge behind the bunker. Firmness? Out of sight. Reverence? Well, when it comes to reverence, you're certainly there with the goods. Conscientiousness? Hope? The ideally? The limit? Absolutely. As for metaphysical penetration? Oh, say, the metaphysical penetration right where you part your hair. Laura! Laura! He called out to his wife. Laura! Fantastic. You've got Charles Eliot Norton of Harvard University whipped to a custard. I've got my hand on it right now. That is your intelligence bump. You can feel it yourself, can't you? Feel it. There, right there. Right there over the ear. Feel it?
Yeah, we can feel something,
replied the human being with a rapt smile.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Wit. Compassion. Oh, poetic talent. Right here where I've got my thumb. Poetic talent. Oh, it's fantastic. I think you'll run as high as 98% on every one of the intellectual faculties. In your case, let's see now, we have a rare combination here of executive ability, or the power to command, and those qualities of benevolence and ideality which contribute to the fostering of permanent religious sentiment. I don't know, sir, what your present occupation is, but you ought to be at least the president of a theological seminary. That will be $3, please. Well, the tall man with the head like a cantaloupe separated himself from 2 days' pay and then went out on the street and pushed people off the sidewalk. After that, he thought so well of himself. Thereafter, as before, of course, he drove a truck delivering pies. But he was always glad to know that he could have been the president of a theological seminary had he so decided. We're going to start playing. And that is George A. The moral is, a good jolly is worth whatever you pay for it. We may need that a little bit later on. That's one of my favorite George A. Fables because, man, it's happening right now. A good jolly is worth whatever you pay for it. Which reminds us. No, you don't have any commercials in there? Oh, they're all live. Hey, friend. If you're the kind of a guy who gets a kick out of driving, fella, you should think about the new 1970 Datsun two-door sedan. It shows its old dust to anything in its class. It goes like a sports car and rides like a dream, fella, guy. Yes, sir. 96 horsepower overhead cam engine. All kidding aside, I'm reading this like a commercial announcer here, but all jesting aside, friend, if you're thinking of buying a car this coming spring, you know, if you're going to pop for something, you better very carefully wait. I suggest you wait till the New York Automobile Show. Wait. Lay your plans. Wait till you see that 240Z Datsun two-seater sports car with the overhead cam engine. Man, it's our guess, if I may use a 1953 slang word, friend. But all kidding aside, though, the Datsun is probably one of the safest cars on the road today. And, in fact, dollar for dollar, it's one of the great buys anywhere in the world. And I would like to go on record right now as saying that you're going to see a lot more Datsuns around the East Coast than you ever believed possible. It's a great little car, and if you'd like to see it in New York, for example, Vass Motors on Rockaway Boulevard, 8514-24 Rockaway in Ozone Park, and in Jersey, Tom O'Brien Imported Cars in Hawthorne, 801 Lafayette Avenue. And regardless of what they say, friends, there is a Hawthorne, New Jersey. And Hawthorne lives. Oh, my God, it lives. Oh, my George, it lives. Which reminds us, we have Rosetta here with us. They live down there at Rosetta High and Dangerous, right off the edge of the hog. And Rosetta is New York's unique electrical supermarket. And they have this gigantic psychedelic window at 75 West 45th Street. And if you haven't seen that psychedelic window, I would like to warn you against it. You must be a person of very strong mental powers of concentration. If you're close to the edge, do not stand in front of the psychedelic window. They took three guys to Bellevue yesterday alone in the afternoon who just happened to walk by. You know, they're coming back from their lunch over at the Horn and Hardart over there on 6th Avenue. They walked past, took one glance at that psychedelic window. Zap! Pow! And they picked him up screaming and yelling and running around and hollering obscenities. And one guy was caught with a psychedelic poster in his hand. Oh, it's sickening. But this is Rosetta, 75 West 45th Street. And they're also at 79 Chambers Street and the big new Rosetta at 73 Murray Street, two blocks west of the City Hall. And all of them offer free parking. And you don't get that very often. Not at all. Now, let's see, we got one more commercial here. It's Quinto Lingo. Quinto Lingo. That's that new soft drink. It's negative calorie, actually. And it's imported from Puerto Rico. It's fantastic stuff. It's made out of tarantula knees, and it's just wonderful. Just great. Oh, no, that's another product. That comes out next week. We have Quinto Lingo. It's the magazine that talks your language. And it's printed in, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That includes Jersey. It's also printed in New Jersey dialect, for those of you who have trouble. And Quinto Lingo is a magazine. You can learn the languages by reading a story in English and seeing how it's said in, for example, French, German, Spanish, Italian, Russian, and Jersey. And if you'd like to see a copy of Quinto Lingo, this is a worldwide magazine. Everybody reads it all over the world. And you'd like to get a free copy, just call 247 right now. Here's the number again in New York City, 247-5353. And say, you're still come on a kid, Vishaga time. That's 247-5353. I repeat, when you get them on the phone, say, you're still come on a kid, Vishaga time. And then wait for the police to arrive. I mean, sit down calmly, have yourself a glass of beer, Miller, of course, and wait. They'll be along. You know, it's not bad in jail, actually. No, you get used to it. I had a friend. Hey, am I glad that the baseball season is beginning to show I'm sorry. I mean, I know. You notice the New York Post has given up hard. It won't concede that football's over. And, they keep referring to Joe Namath. They keep, trying to make it come back. It was so good when pro football was on, you know. Oh, yeah, that's a true slob sport. And, of course, they were right there in there, right in the middle of it all, see. But, nevertheless, I'm glad that baseball is coming back. You know, you can't do anything about it. I know immediately this is going to bore a lot of you. I'm sorry. But there's nothing that could be done about a baseball fan. It is a lifelong thing. And I have a thing hanging up in my office. That's all right. It's W.R. New York. Oh, she's okay now. It's W.R. New York. I did it. Hi, George. Well, you see, I'm very official in this studio. I'm working now out of John Gambling's own official studio. Mm-hmm. Notice the money-colored wallpaper. It's beautiful. Just lovely. And this is the only studio in this entire 14-block area that has a rug on the floor, and it's green. It's money green. I notice that's in it. Color roll, $5 bills. Yes, sirree. Oh, it's lovely. Yeah, yeah. Yes, sirree. There's where they hang up Peter Roberts there between shows. That hook over there, yeah. That's very nice. Oh, by the way, Wednesday, February 18th, this coming Wednesday. Well, that's a week from Wednesday, actually. Wednesday, the 18th. Well, this desk, oh, this is John's desk. You notice the sciences do not touch. So if it sounds a little strange to you, friends, I'm sitting back 34 feet from the microphone here. And I had to bring my own dirty mic in here. John has his own, of course. It's kept in the safe over there. We have these little single buttons. This microphone you're listening to me on is my own microphone. I got it with a Pentron tape recorder one time, which I got by mail from Sears Roebuck, came along. It's kind of nice. And it's shaped like Donald Duck. It's, yeah, it adds a little bit. Quack, quack. Wednesday, February 18th at 8 o'clock, Old Shep is going to be at Middlesex County College in Edison, New Jersey. And it serves him right. He's going to be in the gym. Wednesday, February 18th at 8 o'clock, Middlesex County College. And by the way, anybody who's walking around out there who's in the Middlesex County College area, you are invited, according to the officials at the school there. Wednesday, February 18th, 8 p.m., Middlesex County College, Edison, New Jersey, in the gym. I'll bet you don't know who Edison, New Jersey is named after. I'll bet you don't. No, you're wrong. Clifford Edison, who played second base for the old New York Manhattans. And he was a fantastic glove man, but not much of a stick. However, after all, they don't have much to applaud over there in Middlesex County. And Cliff's the only guy that ever made the big time. That was before, of course, before the New York Manhattans got into the big leagues. They were the forerunners to the New York Knickerbockers. They were the forerunners. That team was the forerunners to the New York Blue Stockings, which were put out of business because of a lot of drinking on the team, and that later became the Yankees. Of course, that was maybe 150 years later. But that's exactly where that town got its name. Clifford, he was known as Clifford Little Stick Edison. Not much of a hitter, but he was a good man around the old sack there. Terrific on second base, double play, pivot plays. Very good. Friends, I'd like to read to you a little story, if you don't mind it. I mean, I hope you don't mind. You know, I'm a nervous person. And I want to read a story to you. If you'll just hold on a minute, I will find the story to you. Once upon a time, a baseball fan lay on his deathbed. He had been a rooter from the days of underhand pitching. It was simply pie for him to tell in what year old Ants began to play with the Rockfords and what Kelly's batting average was the year he sold for $10,000. If you ask him who played center for Boston in 1886, he could tell you, right quick, right off the reel. And he was a walking directory of all the glass arms in the universe. More than once, he had let drive with a pop bottle at the umpire and yelled at the top of his voice, "Robert, who's you?" until his pipes gave out. For many summers, he would come home one evening after another with his collar melted and tell his wife that the Giants made the Colts look like a lot of colonial dames playing beanbag on a weedy lot back of an orphan asylum, and they ought to put a trained nurse on third, and the dummy in right field needed an automobile, and the new man couldn't jump out of a boat and hit the water, and the shortstop wouldn't be able to pick up a ball if it was handed to him on a platter with watercress around it, and the easy one, the third, that ought to have been sponge cake, was fielded like a one-legged man with St. Virus dance trying to do the Nashville salute, okay? Of course, she never knew what he was talking about. All of his life was like that. But she put up with it year after year, mixing throat gargle for him and reading the games to him when he was having his eyes tested and had to wear a green shade. At last, he came to his own ninth inning. And there were two strikes called, no balls. And his friends knew that it was all day with him. That was the end. They stood around and tried to forget that he was a fan. His wife wept softly and consoled herself with the thought that possibly he would have amounted to something had there been no national game. She forgave everything and pleaded, please, one final message, please. His lips moved. She leaned over and listened. Please, your last words. Oh, Bill, please. And slowly, with great effort, it came in halting words. He wanted to know if there was anything in the morning papers about the condition of Bill Lang's knee, the second baseman. And off he went. Off he went into the mortal coil of the great Shays and the great ball fans of all time, past and gone and lost and present. I don't know where it went. It didn't come up. I knew it had come up fine if I waited long enough. It just didn't get through here. Better not. Cheap. Hello? It still's not coming through. I'm sorry. Turn it up. Let's turn it all the way up and make sure it's through. That's it. I knew you could work that knob. There it goes. And I would like to give you the moral for this. There is a specific bacillus, friends, for every classified disease. Yeah. And so baseball fans are just incorrigible. So don't try to talk me out of it. Don't, please. It won't do you any good. Hello, test. There. Very good. All right, that's enough. That's enough. Now, you keep that in there, because I may use that. Hey, you know, speaking of baseball fans, the other night we got on the subject. You remember the other night, just inadvertently, the subject came up about state mottos? Well, I no matter what you do, I've had a theory on the air that I've formulated over the years on the air, that no matter what you do, regardless of what you talk about on the air, you are going to touch somebody. Now, if I came on here and gave you a very detailed description and a discussion, technical, of course, of, let's say, the digestive system of one of the lesser green midges, instantly, a guy would leap up somewhere out in the boondocks. At last! Radio's at last coming to life! At last they're saying something groovy! Hey, Myrtle, come on! Here's the greatest radio! And you'll get a letter about it, right? Well, I talked about the guy that collected the license plates. You remember? Up someplace he collected license plates. No, down south somewhere, I guess. And he wound up by making a cross on the top of his garage in the shape of license plates, and he lit it up at night for Christmas. Oh, it was a very touching little bit of slob art. Oh, yeah. And, well, I got a letter immediately in the next mail, this tear-stained letter. It says, please get me in touch with that man. That is just the most wonderful thing I ever heard of, because I, too, collect license plates. And he said, I have made... Wait a minute. Now, listen to this. He says, I have made a beautiful profile of Franklin Delano Roosevelt out of license plates on the side of my garage. And I would like to write to him about this. A profile of Franklin Delano Roosevelt done in license plates. Oh, no, that's almost as good as the Millard Fillmore geranium bed that I know about, which is just outside of Wayne, Pennsylvania, on the main line. Oh, I lived out there for a while. And in Wayne, Pennsylvania, there is a geranium bed that is in the shape of a beautiful silhouette of the late President Millard Fillmore. Now, think about that for a minute. That's a touching salute. Would you like to hear some of the state nicknames in that? Well, I'm serious. A guy wrote me, and he says, Shepard, that was a great show you did about state names and songs and colors and all that stuff. He says, that's my hobby. He said, I keep them, and I have them all here. Which would you like to know? So he sent me the whole list. He said, here, you can get into the hobby easy. Here, I'll send you my list. For example, friends, how many of you know what the state song of, well, let's see, New York. What do you think the state song? Nope, New York has not got a state song. They do not have state colors. No, New York, you know, New York never takes sides like that. I mean, it's, you know, you got to stay out of racial issues. However, I would like to suggest I will award a brass fig legree with bronze oak leaf palm to any of you Jerseyites. If you think you're a... No, just a minute. You're wrong. If you think that you are a patriotic Jerseyite, what are the colors of New Jersey, the official colors? They have official colors. And I'll give you a clue. One of them is not gold. No, you're wrong. What are the state colors of New Jersey? And even funnier, what is the state what is the state motto? No, that's terrible. No. That's New York's motto. Get out of here. Of course, it's in Latin. The way you New York says it's in Latin. Well, Indiana's motto, you know, is forget it, which I think is a pretty good motto for a state. Here comes. Did he get it? Would you please put him on there, please, if you want? No. Well, I was hoping that we got somebody who knew the motto there. Well, now, here we've got other states now. For example, how about Utah? Now, there's a good one. The name of Utah's song is Utah, we love thee, ever, ever true. Utah, we love thee, ever true. To you we are, pa-pa-da-pa. That's the state song of Utah. Utah, how we love you. Oh, yes. Wait a minute. Hold on. Is this man from New Jersey? That is correct. That is correct. Purple and mauve is the colors of the state of New Jersey. Beautiful, beautiful. He got it right on the head. Have you noticed all those guys in the mafia that have those ties like that? Purple and mauve ties, a little spaghetti on the edge, you know. It's a... Now, Florida, for example. Florida has as its motto, In God We Trust. Well, you know, you got to count on something down there. I've been down there, you know. It's not easy. But try to cash a check down there. Forget it. God shows up, maybe, you know. But outside of that, ordinary mortals. Would you like to know what the Hawaii motto is? I will give you the Hawaii motto. Hawaii. That's the name of the state. Hawaii. The motto of Hawaii is Wa Mau Ki Eo O Ka Aina. I ka pono. I repeat, for any of you out there who would like to learn by heart the state motto of Hawaii, it's ua mau ke ia o ka aina I ka pono. And it goes back to cannibal days. You know, there was cannibalism there at that time. And it's a recipe, in case you're curious. The state motto of Colorado is Neo Nisi Bonum. That's Latin again. It means no rolling the bones here between the hours of 8 and 6. Which is not bad. No, well, you know, they get right down to it. For example, Mississippi's motto is Veritute et Armis. And you know what that means. Leroy Jones, absolutely. Well, I didn't invent it. There it is. How about Oregon? Is the Beaver State? Oregon, the Beaver State. Plenty of beavers out there. And if any of you remember Wayne Morse, he was one of the better beavers that they produced out there. Morgan, Beaver State. He was from Oregon, wasn't he? Beaver State. Yeah, Wayne Morse, or was it Washington? He looked a little like a beaver, but there it is, Oregon. Beaver. And the name of the song is Oregon, my Oregon, I love of thee. Oh, Oregon. Give me a little echo chamber there, please. Oregon, I love thee. O-R-E-G-O-N. Oregon, we love thee. You're not bad. Sorry, Lee. Well, as you see, I know you know what my singing does to you. So it's been an exciting, it's been an exciting hobby point tonight. A little point of interest there. You know how exciting it can be to be in the hobby world and deal with these. Well, you want to hear some more? You want to hear another one? It's curious how many people didn't know the color of the state of New Jersey. Of course, if you go through Secaucus, you might have a couple of hints. I like Secaucus. Nice. I see he caucus. We he love you. Let's see here. Kansas. Oh, you know what Kansas song is? Listen to this one. Home, home on the range, where I hear the antelope play, where I Listen, man, anytime somebody says something, discouraging in Kansas, you forget it. He is in trouble. Never a discouraging word ever heard in Kansas. No, well, that's driven a lot of people right out of that state. There's nothing that makes people madder. Seriously. What are you pointing at that? I've done all the commercials. Oh, well, they have a few shootings in Kansas once in a while, but that's not the same as a discouraging word. No, it's much more direct. Now, for example, I can't believe it. Impossible to believe. How did I get away with it? I can't believe it. Oh, no, that's silly. You should see what the motto is of the state of Connecticut. How did they get away with it? That's rated R, strictly R, man. Oh, no. You know, a lot of states have their motto on the license plate, or as they say in Indiana, the license plate. And a lot of them have it on there, sure. I mean, if they ever actually put on a license plate what the state really stands for, then it would really swing. Like in New York. Get all you can, Dad. Take them. Down the line. Yes, sir. Well, I read last night in the paper, as Will Rogers used to say, I don't know much about nothing except what I read in the papers. And, that's true of all of us, actually. It's kind of sad to see, you can just see in your mind's eye Walter Cronkite sitting around reading a paper. And you wonder where the hell those guys in the paper get it from, and they're sitting around watching Walter Cronkite. And in the end, there must be a little factory somewhere out in, say, West Virginia where the news has turned out. No, it doesn't come from the A&P. I'm sorry. Here comes a report we're just getting from headquarters here. One of the Mafia boys just called. Are you curious what the Mafia's motto is? We just got a call from one of the Mafia boys. Called up and he says, I'm calling from Newark. And once the chick was real scared that took it, Lee just got scared right away. You get a call from Newark, you answer that phone. And she says, yes. And he says, hey, who's that guy on the radio talking about the Mafia? And she says, well, he likes the Mafia. Oh, yeah? She says, yes, he does. He really likes it. Oh, okay. Oh, listen, Ollie, you can call off the heat. He likes the Mafia. And so she got on the phone, and he says, hey, listen, you want to know what the motto of the Mafia is? And she says, yes, we would like to know what the motto of the Mafia is, sir. The motto of the Mafia is, this is Latin, baby. You got it there, right? Get a pencil. Show me on the face. Get a pencil, I said. I want you to write it down. Tell him. And she says, oh, yes, yes, sir, yes, sir. That's what I like, polite girls. Get a pencil. All right, here it is. Pecunia non oleat. You write that down. Pecunia non oleat. I spell it P-C-U-N-I-A. You sure you wrote that right here, Louis? Carrie, you're right. It looks like chicken scratches. All the blood all over the paper. Why don't you give me a new piece of paper? Pecunia non, that's N-O-N. Yeah, that non. N as in, non-compass medicine. N-O-N. Non. Oleat. No, I did not say oleo. I said oleat. O-L-I, no, L-O-E-A-T. Oleat. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And she hung up. And due to my unbelievable grasp of Latin, I can see what the motto of the mafia is. Money has no stink. That's what it means. Money has no bad aroma. Well, I want to salute the mafia out there, boys. You know, I'll tell you, I saw one time, though, somebody do a funny thing. I don't know whether it's funny or not, but I saw a guy almost have a heart attack one day. I mean, he really got scared. Now, you know, I'm using it figuratively. He came home, and one of the engineers thought he was being funny, see? And this was a friend of mine who was an Italian announcer. Good announcer, but Italian. See, he did the Italian shows in Chicago. He did all these Italian disc jockey shows and stuff. And one of the engineers went to his apartment one day, and he cut out of a piece of paper, you know, the kind of paper that kids make witches and stuff out of? He cut out of a piece of paper, Lee, a black hand, and he glued it to this guy's door. Well, you know, it was, he just thought it was going to be funny. The guy didn't show up for work for 4 days. I mean, he just went out on a limb, you know, he was really scared. And when he came back, he must have lost 40 pounds. And he hid under the desk all the time in the office. you gotta be careful of those things. Of course, like yesterday, Jersey's life can be very exciting. And there's so much excitement, so much moving. The battle against machine, the battle against overwhelming, well, you know, technicality life and all that stuff is getting bad in Jersey. Do you know that there's a rumor out? There is a rumor out now that the Jersey flagship is actually moving, that it has moved over 7 yards in the last 3 weeks. It is moving upstream on Route 22. So before long, it's liable to go into Teaneck, and, you know, it's seeking its own, but nobody knows what it's about, you know. I've always had a little desire, though, myself, to get a gigantic 500-horsepower outboard engine. I just go out there some night at 2 in the morning and climb up on the fantail there of that old flagship and start her up. But, of course, Jersey is just like any other state, that it's good and bad. You have guys that get excited and guys that don't. But I want to salute this unknown citizen. I will not use his name because he prefers it not to, I'm sure. That unknown citizen who the other day in Jersey stood there by the coffee machine, and he put his quarter, you know, the kind that says put in 25 cents or 15 cents and change, and if you put in a quarter, your change will come out, you know those machines? And it says press the button for a coffee with cream or a coffee black or a coffee with cream and no sugar. It has all kinds of buttons all on the front of this thing. Well, he threw in a quarter, see. Well, what did the machine do? Well, what does the Jersey machine do that works for the mafia? What does it do, huh? It went, nothing. And he stood there for a second, and he kicked the machine in the spot where all the other employees kicked the machine. It's the machine's weak spot, see? Usually if you kick it in that spot, it's the equivalent of kicking a guy you know where. And he kicks the machine in that spot, and instead of the machine doubling up and yelling and throwing the coffee out like it should do, it doesn't do anything. It just goes, bleh. Got so bugged. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a Roscoe. Did you hear about that? A little echo chamber there to do it. They pulls out the Roscoe, see, and he aims it right at the cup dispenser. He figured that was the heart of the machine, see. And then he pulled the trigger. Right through the guts. Well, the machine let out a scream. You know how machines are. And then the coffee syrup is dripping out of his side. It's the last words. And the guy looked at the machine and says, you have cheated me for the last time. Well, then they came and got him. They put him in a wagon. They fined him $100 and a whole bit, suspended sentence and all. Now, the question is, I'd like to ask this question. It's a philosophical question. Is this attempted, or in fact, is it consummated homicide? In this day and age, when man and the machine have blended so, almost as a single unit, man cannot exist without the machine, right? The machine cannot exist without man. And so the machine is part of man. Collect them all. All right. When you shoot a machine, is that homicide then? Or should there be a new, what would it be? Mechanocide. How do you like that? Yeah, mechanocide. I just invented it. That's the killing, wanton killing of a defenseless machine, which was just sitting there trying to do its duty, which is to cheat you. And you shot it. Well, this guy did it for a lot of people. On the other hand, look at the machine side. What person out there wouldn't cheat a machine if he got the chance? Is there anybody out there who, when he puts a quarter in a machine and the thing throws $17 and change back at him, he puts it back in? Oh, not on your you-know-what. I don't know a single person. It happened to me the other day. I shouldn't have told you this, Lee, but it did. Yes, sir, it happened at the airport. I put a quarter in for the coffee. You know what I got back out? 45 cents. And the coffee. It is true. There was a dead mouse in it. But after all, I got the coffee. So did the mouse. But I mean, share and share alike, I say, with your fellow denizens of the earth. Well, what did I do with the extra dough? Did I, you know, like a good Samaritan, a good honest man, did I stick it back into the little change slot down there? Say, here, no, you're giving me too much here. Oh, come on. Oh, did I not? No. Not a bit of it. Well, it's because my problem with the machines, of that type of machine, we've all got our little stories about the machines, but I'll tell you, I have had a couple of embarrassing little moments with those babies. And one of the greatest ones happened one time when I was with my kid brother. First time I ever actually saw this happen. He had a little skinny hand, you know. I was about, I was about eight. He was about seven, six and a half, something like that. And he was little, you know. And he was about 3 feet, maybe 4 feet one or something like that. Little skinny hand, see. So we're in this department store. Well, now, you know, when you go in these big department stores, a lot of times by the doorway they have a big candy machine, cigarette machine, all that stuff. And so there's about 28 million people walking around. We're just kids. We're hitting the machine and banging away at it. Well, you know how you do. And I have to seriously fight back an overwhelming impulse every time I walk past a candy machine to just reach out and pull all the levers. Because you never know. On several occasions, I have reached out gratuitously, pulled a lever, and gotten myself a Hershey bar with almonds. Just came out, you know. Bop, out it came. That's a great feeling. Even if you don't want the candy bar, it's just a great feeling to know you got something free. Well, my kid brother's hanging around. Both of us are looking at the machine. We're waiting for my mother. She's over in the pattern department or someplace, you know, one of the lady departments. And he reaches into the big slot, you know, the big bin where the candy bars come out of. He reaches down into the slot, and he reaches his hand back up under the machine. Now he's got his hand stuck in a machine up to the elbow. And I'm standing in front of him. See, I'm sort of shielding him so that the floor walker and all that stuff, they don't see him. See, he's got his hand up there. He's reaching way up into this machine, and all of a sudden, I don't know what button he touched, but he grabbed a hold of something. And you know that big slot that you look at the top where it shows all the candy bars that are in there? There were a whole pile of Babe Ruth candy bars, maybe 25 of them. He touched the button, and blah! Every Babe Ruth candy bar came down the slot, and they came pouring out into this great big bin, and they piled up on the floor. And instantly, I mean, he turns around, I turns around, and here we have 25 Baby Ruth candy bars, when a couple of seconds before, we couldn't have even afforded a 1 cent Mary Jane. Now we are totally rich. And one kid comes along, you know, so one of the kids is coming along with a pair of goggles. He sees one, he grabs one, instantly. And my brother sticks one in his pocket, and I start eating one. and the floor walker comes wandering over. I says, yes, there seems to be something wrong with the machine.
Yeah, I put it in time and look at all the candy comes out.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're honest. Mm-hmm. Well, here, you can have a candy bar, young man, for being honest and not picking up all the candy bars. And here, you, young man, you too can have a candy bar. And he gave me one. And with that, he called over a worker, and they picked up all the other candy bars. And it was the first heist that my brother was involved in that was successful. There were others. They came later for bigger stakes. And I will tell about those on later. In fact, he provided three wonderful episodes on the Perry Mason Show. Lost the case, but they were exciting. Oh, let's do it again. Up and down, up and down. Oh, my God. That was exciting, wasn't it? That's what happens, you know, when you get these cheap tires. I can feel that thing. Look at it. Oh,